Israel and Palestinians accuse each other of war crimes.
Measures need to be taken urgently, both by the parties concerned and by all states, particularly those with influence, to prevent any such crimes.
Plus, hostages released by Hamas return home to Thailand. Would they ever go back?
Wishian is from Thailand's rice-producing Isan region, where average farm wages are $10 a day. In Israel, Thais can earn up to $1,700 a month.
And later, St. Nicholas brings presents to Ukrainian children while Congress debates sending more aid to Ukrainian forces. Plus an update from COP28 in Dubai. Today is Wednesday, December 6th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. It's St. Nicholas Day in Kyiv. We'll learn more about this holiday later in the show. Now, huge plumes of smoke could be seen rising over the central and northern Gaza Strip on Wednesday, with Israeli military vehicles moving in border areas in their war against Hamas, a U.S.-designated terror group. Israeli troops and tanks have pushed through to the southern part of the Gaza Strip after largely gaining control of the north in a campaign to eliminate Hamas and rescue hostages taken on October 7th. Daniel Hagari is a spokesperson for the Israeli army.
As the IDF expands its operations to dismantle Hamas in Gaza, we have not lost sight, not for one moment, of our critical mission to rescue our hostages, to do everything in our power to bring our hostages home. Our intelligence has been monitoring the situation of our hostages, and I can say with absolute certainty, every minute in Hamas captivity endangers their lives.
Israeli forces have encircled the city of Khan Yunis. Israel says its soldiers were engaged in fierce battles on Wednesday and had struck hundreds of targets in Gaza. Hamas's armed wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, also said that its fighters were engaged in clashes with Israeli forces. Meanwhile, United Nations Human Rights Chief Volker Turk warned on Wednesday of a heightened risk of atrocity crimes in Gaza, and he urged parties involved to refrain from committing such violations. According to the UN, the term atrocity crimes refers to the crimes of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes as defined by international treaties.
Measures need to be taken urgently, both by the parties concerned and by all states, particularly those with influence, to prevent any such crimes. The international community needs to insist with one voice on a ceasefire immediately, on human rights and humanitarian grounds.
He continued, saying that conditions in Gaza are worsening.
Palestinians in Gaza are living in utter, deepening horror. Military operations, including bombardments by Israeli forces, continue in north, middle, and south Gaza, affecting people who have already been displaced multiple times, forced to flee in search of safety. But no place is safe. As we speak, some 1.9 million out of the 2.2 million Palestinians have been displaced and are being pushed into ever-diminishing and extremely overcrowded places in southern Gaza in unsanitary and unhealthy conditions. And humanitarian aid is again virtually cut off as fears of widespread disease and hunger spread.
Turk noted what he called dehumanizing and insightful statements made by high-level Israeli officials and figures from Hamas, which he said could be potentially viewed as incitement to committing atrocity crimes. Both sides already claim to be the victim of war crimes and are preparing to present legal cases to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. VOA's Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem that the court's chief prosecutor heard from both Israelis and Palestinians during a visit to Israel and the West Bank.
International Criminal Court Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan toured the ruins of Israeli communities that Hamas gunmen attacked on October 7th. The attackers killed more than 1,200 Israelis and took 240 others as hostages, most of them civilians. Khan listened to the testimony of survivors and family members of the hostages, calling the attacks serious international crimes that shook the conscience of humanity.
Hostage taking represents a great breach to the Geneva Conventions. It represents a specific offense under the Rome Statute. And I call for the immediate release of all hostages taken from Israel and for their safe return to their families.
Lawyers for the Hostage and Missing Families Forum, a group of families of the hostages, say they want Khan to immediately open an investigation on behalf of hundreds of October 7th victim families even before the war ends. Yuval Sasson is one of the group's attorneys.
There's no question about jurisdiction against Hamas. There's no question about it being wide-scale and systematic and an international crime against humanity, war crime and genocide.
But Palestinians argue that it is Israel that has been violating international law by its military campaign in Gaza, which has killed more than 15,000 people, a majority of them women and children, according to the Hamas-controlled health ministry in Gaza. Raji Sarani is a Palestinian human rights lawyer speaking to VOA from the Gaza Strip.
The legal situation, literally, it's war crimes, crimes against humanity. There is ethnic cleansing, genocide taking place in the Gaza Strip. What's going on? Rule of jungle, not the rule of law.
ICC prosecutor Khan addressed Palestinian war crimes claims against Israel when he met with Palestinian Authority leaders in the West Bank town of Ramallah. But many Palestinian human rights organizations boycotted his visit, accusing him of favoring Israeli claims over long-standing Palestinian charges. In his remarks to Palestinian West Bank leaders, Khan acknowledged the suffering of Palestinian civilians in Gaza.
In Gaza, it is not acceptable. There's no justification for doctors to perform operations without light, for children to be operated upon without anesthetics. Imagine the pain. But I was crystal clear that this is the time to comply with the law. It's already late. But if Israel doesn't comply now, they should complain later.
Besides the case before the International Criminal Court on behalf of the Israeli victims' families, the State of Israel will conduct military trials of about 900 Hamas militants arrested on October 7th, including charges of sexual violence as a war crime. While the war in Gaza continues to rage on the battlefield, Israeli and Palestinian legal activists prepare for a different kind of fight in international court. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
The conversation of war crimes has spread to Europe as well. Human rights groups are trying to stop the export of American-owned F-35 fighter jet parts from the Netherlands to Israel, arguing in court that the exports could make the Dutch government complicit in possible war crimes. Reuters' Matthew Laratonda is covering that part of the story for us.
A court in the Netherlands is weighing a lawsuit that's attempting to stop exports from that country of American-owned spare parts for the F-35 fighter jet that would be destined for Israel. It's brought by several human rights groups, including the local branch of the charity Oxfam. They say that allowing the exports to go forward could make the country complicit in possible war crimes from the conflict in Gaza. This was court convening in The Hague on Monday. The Netherlands is home to a warehouse for the American F-35 parts, which are normally shipped onwards to other countries, including Israel. Lisbeth Zegveld is a lawyer representing the human rights groups.
We all know how the war is conducted. It's from the air, and the F-35 is by far the most advanced military equipment that Israel has. So it's important that someone says, till this point and no further.
A lawyer for the Dutch government says the exports are part of wider obligations and security issues, including Israel's right to defend itself. Israel denies committing war crimes in the conflict with Hamas. The court's decision is expected in 2 weeks.
That's Reuters' Matthew Laratonda. And on the subject of war crimes, the U.S. has charged 4 Russian troops in Ukraine with war crimes for the torture of an American living in Ukraine with his Ukrainian wife. Attorney General Merrick Garland described the crimes as heinous.
During his 10 days detained by Russia-affiliated forces, the victim in this case was tortured, threatened with sexual assault and execution, forced to perform manual labor, and beaten in the head, chest, and stomach with the soldiers' feet, their fists, and their guns. Again and again, he believed he he was going to die. These charges against four Russia-affiliated military personnel are the Justice Department's first criminal charges under the U.S. War Crimes Statute. They are also an important step toward accountability for the Russian regime's illegal war in Ukraine.
The war crimes Israel has accused Hamas of committing include taking civilians as hostages. Many of the hostages were not Israeli, but rather migrant workers in Israel temporarily. So far, 23 Thai citizens taken hostage by Hamas have returned home after being held captive for 50 days inside Gaza. But with chronically low wages in their rural homes, some are prepared to return to Israel despite their ordeal. Vijitra Duangdi has more from Thailand's Isan region.
A homecoming for a survivor of horrors thousands of kilometers away. Wishin Themtong started working on an Israeli avocado farm just 6 days before Hamas militants stormed Kibbutz Sa'ad, killing seven other Thai migrant workers. He was taken hostage and held for 7 weeks. A migrant worker from Thailand's poorest region, caught in someone else's war. He returned with 23 other Thais, freed during the now-lapsed ceasefire. But nine more remain captive. Wuxian says that he's received the warmest welcome from everyone, and that they've been coming to see him since he has returned. His wife told him that everyone had been following the news. He had no idea because he had not seen the light of day for nearly 2 months. He's so happy to be back. Over 30,000 Thais worked in Israel before the Hamas assault. 39 Thais died in the raid, with 32 taken hostage in the bloody chaos. Wuxian, like the others who have returned, will not discuss the conditions of his capture, while the other hostages remain inside Gaza. Yet, like many others, he is determined to go back to Israel to work and change the fortunes of his family. He says that the Israelis let him take a 6-month break and he is mentally recovered, and that if they have stopped fighting by then, he will request to return to work. He says he only worked for 6 days and hadn't earned anything. He hasn't paid off his debt yet. Wuxian is from Thailand's rice-producing Isan region, where average farm wages are $10 a day. In Israel, Thais can earn up to $1,700 a month. Overseas work can be life-changing for Isan people, allowing migrants with little education to build a home or send their kids to college. Hamas' kidnapping of Thai migrants has cast a spotlight on the poverty of millions of people in the Southeast Asian country. As she waited at the airport for her cousin Komkrit Chombua to return from Israel, Pianat Puchutti said Thailand's low wages make overseas work inevitable for Isan's people. Pianat says her cousin just wanted to give his family a better life, give them a home and money, now safe and at home. Komkrit has also left a door open to return to the overseas workforce. He says he's so happy to be back. He feels like he's been reborn. The whole village welcomed him back. Hard choices remain for Thailand's poorest people. Stay poor at home or risk their lives overseas. Vichitra Rundi, VOA News, Isan Region, Thailand.
You're listening to Flashpoint, Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. An update from Kyiv in a moment. First, though, an update from Washington on the progress, or rather lack of progress, on Congress's work to pass a funding bill to aid Ukraine and Israel. On Wednesday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will meet with the head of the office of the President of Ukraine and chairman of the Verkhovna Rada, Ukraine's legislative body, at the State Department. This as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky canceled his scheduled video address to American senators as they debate more funding for Kyiv. On Wednesday, the U.S. Senate is expected to hold a test vote to see if there is enough support to pass the White House's request for $60 billion in aid to Ukraine to fight Russian aggression. But as VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, Senate Republicans are insistent on passing border security funding in return for their support.
A new round of aid to Ukraine is in jeopardy as Republicans accuse Democrats of failing to consider their border security proposals in return for their votes. Republican Senator Kevin Cramer.
You've got an entire political party who it appears is willing to flush support for Ukraine and Israel down the drain because they'd rather have a wide open border.
Democrats argue the White House's $106 billion national security request, which includes Democratic priorities for border security funding, should be considered altogether. Chuck Schumer is the majority leader in the U.S. Senate.
Democrats are serious about getting Ukraine done, and Republicans are not. We're serious. We're giving them a golden opportunity to pass a proposal on border.
White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said earlier this week that time to help Ukraine is running out.
The administration will run out of resources by the end of the year to procure more weapons and equipment for Ukraine and to provide equipment from U.S. military stocks without impacting our own military readiness.
Democrats are doubtful a procedural vote Wednesday to test support for aid to Ukraine and Israel will pass. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy serves on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
We've got work to do if they're insistent on changing immigration law in order to save the world from Vladimir Putin.
Any compromise passed in the Democratic majority U.S. Senate would be unlikely to pass the Republican majority U.S. House of Representatives, where some lawmakers argue the Biden White House has not yet defined victory in Ukraine. Representative Mike Johnson is the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives.
There are important questions that must be answered so that we can continue with these negotiations. Among those is, what is the objective? What is the end game in Ukraine? How are we going to have proper oversight over the funds, the precious treasure of American taxpayers?
Democrats warned Tuesday that Russian President Vladimir Putin hopes to see a collapse of U.S. support that could also deter European allies from contributing aid. Representative Adam Smith is the top Democrat on the House Armed Services Committee.
We have clear objectives in Ukraine. We've been achieving those objectives. Let's not back down now.
U.S. lawmakers are running out of time to make a deal. The U.S. Congress is scheduled to go out of session for the holidays at the end of next week. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
By the time many of you hear this broadcast, the test vote will have already occurred. Log on to voanews.com for the latest information. Speaking to reporters Tuesday night as he returned to the White House, President Joe Biden denounced the reluctance of congressional Republicans to approve the Ukraine aid package without tying it to border policy, as Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has insisted.
The failure to support Ukraine is just absolutely crazy. It's against U.S. interests. It's against the interests of the world. It's just wrong. And we're going to get that. We're going to get that aid. We're going to get it.
We'll check in on COP28 in Dubai in a moment. Now to Kyiv, where Ukrainians are celebrating two special days. Wednesday is the Day of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, while Ukrainian children receive presents for St. Nicholas Day as well. Meanwhile, Russian forces conducted another massive drone attack on Ukraine overnight. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv has the details.
December 6 is St. Nicholas Day, and Ukrainian children woke up with excitement to find presents under their pillows, beds, or Christmas trees. St. Nicholas is the main character in the Ukrainian Christmas tradition who brings children presents and is the most beloved by children. December 6 is the feast day of St. Nicholas, a prototype of Santa Claus, and is celebrated as a Christian festival with particular regard to St. Nicholas' reputation as a bringer of gifts. Children wait for St. Nicholas to come and bring presents provided that the children were good during the year. Children who behaved badly may expect to find a twig. Also on December 6, Ukraine marked the Day of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, a day to celebrate and honor Ukraine's soldiers. Valery Zaluzhny, Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, shared a video address as well with the words of support and admiration to the Ukrainian Armed Forces. President Zelensky honored Ukrainian soldiers in his morning address to the nation and visited some of the wounded soldiers in the hospital and presented them with awards. Meanwhile, overnight, Russian forces attacked Ukraine with drones targeting the Dnipropetrovsk and Mykolaiv regions, as well as western regions. The drone attack was launched from the territory of occupied Crimea and the Kursk region of Russia. No casualties or damage have been reported. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
And finally today, continuing coverage of the climate crisis. The COP28 summit in Dubai is becoming heated as leaders debate how to rein in global warming amid accusations that the hosts have invited a record number of lobbyists from the fossil fuel industry. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Some 70,000 delegates are attending the United Nations COP28 Climate Change Conference. Politicians, scientists, campaigners, advocating a myriad array of interests and ideas. But the focus appears to be narrowing on a key question. Do we need to ban fossil fuels outright? Coal, oil and gas are blamed for much of global warming, but are also the driving force behind many economies, including that of summit host United Arab Emirates. The latest figures show 2023 is expected to be a record-breaking year for global carbon dioxide emissions. Research from a coalition of environmental groups suggests more than 2,400 delegates at COP28 are connected to fossil fuel industries. Eric Njuguna is from the Kick Big Polluters Out coalition.
This is seven times larger than indigenous people's delegation and a four times increase from last year's 636 delegates who are lobbyists from the fossil fuel industry.
Scientists say greenhouse gas emissions need to be slashed by 43% over the next 6 years. But current trajectories suggest emissions will actually rise by 9% over that same time span. Again, Eric Njuguna.
And that is why at COP28, we need a strong commitment to phase out all fossil fuels, not just coal, not just unabated fossil fuels, but all fossil fuels, including oil, gas and coal.
Others say that's unrealistic, and fossil fuels will have to be part of the energy mix, alongside innovations like carbon markets and carbon capture. Current COP28 President Sultan Al Jaber is also head of the United Arab Emirates state-run oil company, which plans to increase production substantially by 2030. He wants a phasing down of fossil fuels rather than a phasing out, insisting that this is the only way to rein in global warming while allowing for development. Facing a barrage of criticism, the COP president defended his stance Tuesday.
I am quite surprised with the constant and repeated attempts to undermine the work of the COP28 presidency and the attempts to undermine the message that we keep repeating when it comes to how much we respect the science.
That has done little to placate his critics. Climate activist and former U.S. Vice President Al Gore.
We cannot play games designed to protect the obscene profits of these oil and gas petrostates.
COP28 has got off to a heated start. Observers say the hosts face a tough challenge to oversee negotiations towards a final declaration, with the spotlight so firmly fixed on the summit president himself. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
And that's going to do it for today's show. There is more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
Stay up to date with VOA Podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories, while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth every week.